hand within his cloak, keeping his sword within easy reach. The knight had never met a dwarf before, and he couldn't be sure of his feelings towards Asher.
"Heavy belly!"
Russell Mabry scolded the dwarf from the end of the bar.
"What?"
the dwarf replied, with his hands held high. The smaller warrior looked from Russell to Asher, to the three companions that stood to the side.
"Are they with ye?"
Asher nodded with a hint of annoyance on his face.
"Seriously?"
the dwarf asked again.
"Yes." "Well then."
The dwarf stood back and hooked his thumbs into the armored plates on his chest.
"I am Doran, son of Dorian, the clan of Heavy Belly. At ye service."
Nathaniel couldn't help staring at the dwarf. An unusual sight south of Vengora, the mountain range in the north that divided Ilion from Denheim, the dwarven realm. Phelan took it in her stride, like most things, and Rhaena simply beamed at Doran, always excited to see new things.
"Introductions can wait, Heavy Belly."
Russell ushered them all, Doran included, through a door beyond the bar.
"Thank ye, young lady."
Doran licked his whiskers and scooped up a tray of beers set down by the barmaid. Asher reassured Nathaniel and the others with a look as they descended the staircase that led under the tavern. His show of ease and trust towards these people were enough for Nathaniel and Rhaena, but Phelan remained ever vigilant. The private tavern beneath the axe was a cozy chamber, void of windows and lit with torches and candles, with a stone fireplace set against the far wall. A small bar was situated in the corner, surrounded by a sheer wall of stacked beer kegs. A long table occupied the other side of the room, while comfy chairs and rugs were situated in front of the fireplace. The stone walls were lined with weapons, both old and new, as well as the mounted stuffed heads of a gobber, a troll, and even a sandstalker. The pickaxe was becoming the strangest tavern Nathaniel had ever seen. A light melody was being played on a tambur by an olive-skinned man sat atop the long table, with his foot resting on the bench. He stopped playing the tune the instant he locked eyes with Asher. He wasn't the only one who stopped what they were doing, Nathaniel noticed. An older-looking man with a bushy grey beard and tattered mage's robes put his steaming drink down by the fireplace and stood up, along with a young woman with long, dark braided hair. The barbarian Asher had almost walked into upstairs was sitting at a small round table in the corner, but he paid no attention to their entrance. Another man, with his back to them, was sitting with his head hung low over the bar in the opposite corner, oblivious to them all.
"That was a long stretch, old-timer."
The eloquent voice came from the right of the stairs, where a man with dark skin and a bald head rested against a wooden beam. His white moustache and goatee lifted into a smile as his brown eyes took in the sight of the ranger.
"Too long,"
Asher agreed, embracing the man's forearm.
"Do my eyes deceive me?"
the bald man asked, looking over Nathaniel and the elves.
"Yes, they're with me,"
the ranger announced, clearly growing tired of the assumptions. The bald man looked over the companions with a grave expression and bade them to take a seat by the fire. Russell closed the door leading to the tavern upstairs and locked it with a key.
"Asher,"
Phelan whispered, touching his elbow.
"We can trust these people," the ranger replied, placing his hand lightly over the top of hers.
"Indeed you can, miss,"
the bald man said warmly. "We are rangers all, like your friend Asher here." Asher moved to the fire, and Nathaniel joined him, keeping close to Rhaena, who was still mesmerized by the sight of Doran Heavybelly.
"I am Jonas Glade, but everyone just calls me Glade."
The bald man placed his palm over his chest and smiled.
"This is Hadavad, and his newest apprentice, Atharia Danel."
Glade gestured to the bearded man in old mage robes and the young woman close to his side. Still wary, Nathaniel observed Asher's nod to the olive-skinned man walking towards him, but the two embraced as old friends.
"This is Salim al-Anan."
Glade held out his hand when the southerner Salim stepped back from Asher. Salim cut a lean figure with long black hair and a well-trimmed beard. He wore black robes that touched the floor and a wide red piece of cloth that wrapped around his waist. A white ornate dagger with a curved tip was tucked into the makeshift belt above several leather pouches. Nathaniel knew a trained soldier when he saw one.
It was obvious by the way Selim carried himself, though the young knight couldn't figure out the man's history.
"You've already had the pleasure of meeting Doran," Glade continued, looking down at the dwarf who was inhaling a tray full of beer.
"What is this place?"
Nathaniel asked, glancing at a previously unseen head of a gorgon, with its eyes gouged out.
"This is the pickaxe," Glade smiled. "Mr. Mabry over there is the proprietor of this fine establishment. It's more of a home away from home for us wayward types, and Russ is content for us to pay our way through Tales of the Road." Glade pointed to the tavern above. "It brings in the customers, though I doubt it's our tales the people of Lyrian crave." Everyone's eyes rested on Asher. There isn't a ranger here who can't say they owe their lives to Asher. The barbarian's chair dragged across the stone floor until it toppled over. "So you the famous Asher?" The huge man slowly walked over towards the gathered group, his eyes fixed on the ranger. "Bail?" Russell Mabry's tone was unmistakably threatening. The barbarian continued his determined stride. Nathaniel gripped his sword firmly now, ready to strike if he must. Having grown up in Longdale in the north, Nathaniel had met many of the barbarians' type as they travelled south, out of the Iron Valley, to trade. Though they weren't as wild and unpredictable as the outlanders from the mysterious wild moors, the barbarians were still brutish thugs with a warped sense of honour and glory. Bale's accent was thick, and his use of the common tongue was basic. "I have travelled world in search of contest. A good death cannot be found in Iron Valley. South of the slumbering mountains, all I hear are whispers of ranger, assassin, great warrior, they say. I would know the truth." "You know the rules of my house." Mabry unfolded his thick arms. "They always talk," Nathaniel thought. The knight had already assessed the man mountain while he spoke. For all the barbarian's muscles and sheer bulk, he was still vulnerable in the throat and knees, the same as everyone else. His nerve clusters were all in the same places, and easily manipulated by the well-trained knight, and his size simply made him a massive target that couldn't be missed by a well-placed throwing knife. With his spare hand, Nathaniel made certain that the two short daggers were resting in the small of his back. "I'm starting to think like Asher," he thought, with a pinch of amusement. Before it could come to blows, however, Glade stepped between Bale and Mabry, the apparent voice of wisdom in the axe. Glade's words were soft but bold. "Bale, son of Hyle of the Oakbreaker tribe, have you ever known me to lie?" The barbarian looked down at the older man with suspicion and slowly shook his head. "Have you ever known me to exaggerate?" Again, Bale could only shake his head. "Then listen to me when I tell you that fighting Asher will not grant you a good death, just a messy one." The barbarian looked from Glade to Asher quizzically. After another moment's thought, Bale snorted his amusement and returned to his little table. Nathaniel released the white-knuckled grip on the hilt of his sword. "Bah! Always getting in the way of some fun." Doran Heavybelly practically spat his words at Glade, who only chuckled at the dwarf's response. The group returned their focus on Asher and the companions. "Tell us a tale, Asher." Selim rested against the mantelpiece as Hadavad and Atharia sat cross-legged on the floor. "Perhaps some introductions," Hadavad said, his grey eyes fixed curiously on Rayna and Phelan. Nathaniel knew what surprise awaited the rangers of the axe. They had already spoken of how their mission and very survival would depend upon secrecy. The revelation of the elves' existence would put all of that in jeopardy, and yet Nathaniel and the elves, to some extent, trusted Asher's judgment. "I am Nathaniel Galfrey," the knight announced, prolonging the elves' introduction in case a lie was being constructed. "Galfrey?" A questioning voice came from the small bar in the corner. The unknown man, whose head had been slumped between his shoulders, stepped off his stool and joined them in the firelight, along with the man's alcoholic odour. "As in, Tobin Galfrey." He was older than Asher, but perhaps a little younger than Glade, with short but unkempt white hair and a thick white moustache against a stubbled face. Cold blue eyes and angular features told of a hard life on the road, but his build was wiry and strong, and like Salim, the man carried himself as a soldier. A long, haggard and dirty coat hung to his calves in tatters. Most of it was covered in armour and straps, except none of it appeared to match, with his shoulder pads and one knee pad layered in flat cylindrical spikes and single bracer on one arm, with strips of blue fabric wrapped around the other. The sword hanging from his waist was the most telling of all, however, for Nathaniel had an identical one sheathed on his own waist. "He was my father," Nathaniel replied. The legendary greycoat that had been his father would forever cast a shadow over any of his deeds. It was his father's love for his mother, however, that cast Nathaniel in a bad light. The Order had always seen Nathaniel as a walking monument to their greatest warrior's singular failure,
in breaking his oath to never sire a child. To Nathaniel, he had just been the father he loved and missed.
I knew him.
The disheveled man looked into the fire, as if he was seeing into the past.
You're a greycoat, Nathaniel stated.
Glade said, This is Caleb Jourdain, formerly of the Greycoats.
I don't need you to introduce me, Glade,
Caleb snapped, with unfocused eyes struggling to settle on the ranger.
I am Caleb Jourdain, and apparently not the only disgraced greycoat in this establishment.
The old ranger looked over Nathaniel's attire.
I have left the order of my own volition,
Nathaniel firmly replied. This wasn't a conversation he wanted to get into.
So did I, right after they told me to get out,
Caleb added quietly.
The price of love.
Glade held up his hand to stop the ranger from continuing his story, but Caleb ignored him.
I left thinking I had a good woman and a baby to raise.
The ranger stopped mid-sentence to burp. Until it turned out the baby wasn't mine and... The drunkard twirled his finger in the air as if that explained the rest of his sad tale.
Why don't you have a seat, Caleb?
Russell Mabry put another tankard of ale into his chest and rested a meaty hand on the ranger's shoulder.
Don't mind if I do,
Caleb replied with a simple smile, dropping into the comfy armchair. An awkward moment hung between the group while they waited to see if Caleb would continue his rant.
Hadavad the old wizard spoke up first. I'm sure that your tale is a good one, Mr. Galfrey, but perhaps first we could learn of your companions.
Hadavad looked at the elves with that same curious expression.
I can feel the magic that surrounds you both.
Atharia Darnell nodded absently in agreement with her mentor. Phelan and Rayna looked to one another before meeting Asha's reassuring nod. The elves removed their hoods with both hands and allowed the ensemble of rangers to look upon their fair features. Nathaniel could see their pointed ears between their long hair, and so, too, could the rest.
Rayna stepped forward and announced, I am Princess Rayna Savari of the Elven Nation, and this is my mentor and protector, Phelan Haldor.
As expected, there was a stunned silence that followed. Even Doran Heavybelly looked at the elves in silence, with beer dripping down his yellow beard as it flowed out of the tankard. Nathaniel looked to Asha, who was leaning against the wall with a broad smile on his face.
There are rumors coming out of Velia that elves have returned to Ilion,
Glade said, with his dark eyes fixed on the elves' unusual ears.
Bah! If that's an elf, then I'm a bearded goat.
Doran slammed his now empty tankard down.
Elves left 1,000 years ago for pastures better than these. Why would ye return now?
That is a long story, Master Dwarf, Rayna replied with a sad smile, while looking to Asha and Nathaniel.
We will need to stay here while we prepare for our journey south,
Asha explained to the elf.
Tell the tale, and earn our keep,
the ranger made for the door.
Where are you going?
Phelan asked.
To get us some money for our supplies, and find a caravan travelling south.
Asha looked from Nathaniel to Rayna, silently indicating for the greycoat to remain behind.
I have supplies aplenty for any journey, Asha.
You're welcome to them, Russell offered.
Thank you. But our journey will be long, and more supplies required along the way.
Asha continued for the door.
You're traveling south?
Glade asked, tearing his eyes from the elves.
Sit a while, and listen to their tale,
Asha bade.
I promise you, it's a good one.
Well, we best get some more ale then, eh?
Doran looked to Russell with a raised eyebrow.
Chapter 9 In the Service of the Gods. King Macaris strode through the maze of dark tunnels that formed the foundation of his keep. Originally built by his ancestor, King Gal Tion, the first human king in Ilion, the elaborate tunnels had been built as a last resort in case of a siege. The enemy would be forced to pursue them into the labyrinth, where a series of traps and ambushes could be fought on Tion's terms. Most of the tunnels were abandoned now, and the separate rooms knocked together to form a chamber big enough to store Namdor's records. The two guards standing outside the tall double doors had their backs to the king. He could sense the fear on them as they stared at the black doors with trepidation. They had been ordered to ensure Valinus's privacy, but news had filtered up to the king regarding some apparent distress from within the archives. Macaris was silent in his approach, listening to the sound from within. The sound of tables being upturned and chairs broken apart echoed from inside. A roar that would halt the bravest of souls erupted from the other side of the door.
Leave!
The guards jumped back at the sudden order from their king. They bowed sharply and left at once, both wise enough not to question the king of Orith. Makaris hesitated as he rested his hands against the cool metal of the doorknobs. He had only ever been in the presence of Alanis in the caverns behind Caliban, deep in the mountains of Vengora. Seeing the dark elf in his personal chamber had been exciting, intoxicating, terrifying. Even as a human, Makaris could feel the magical aura that surrounded Valinus, cocooning him in power. Hearing his master's rage only made Makaris feel as powerful as an insect. The king pushed through into the records room. Bookshelves higher than most houses stood in rows that stretched back for 50 meters. The central aisle was usually decorated with long tables and chairs, with low-hanging chandeliers above each one. But now the chamber was a mess. Scrolls covered the floor, some burnt and shredded, while others were left in frozen pieces. The tables and chairs were piles of splinters and pikes strewn throughout the shelves and central aisle. Three of the large shelves at the back of the chamber had been toppled over like pieces of dominoes.
"Where is it?"
the otherworldly voice roared. Makaris cautiously moved through the tattered papers and scrolls, searching for his master amidst the records. Valinus appeared, as if from nowhere, and picked the king up with one hand, his iron grip wrapped around Makaris's throat. Calculating, purple eyes stared back at him from behind the menacing mask. The dark elf's breathing filled the chamber, overpowering the king's desperate sputterings. Valinus eventually sighed, and casually released Makaris to fall to the floor, joining the pile of scrolls. The king massaged his throat and gasped, while Valinus slowly walked away.
"Forgive me, Makaris."
The dark elf pulled back his hood and removed the helmet. King Makaris forgot his plight in an instant, gazing upon the beauty of his master. Valinus truly was a god. His long blonde hair flowed down his back, with two pointed ears protruding at the sides. The dark elf's features were fair but strong, set against those dazzling purple eyes. The chamber was granted more light when Valinus's skin literally glowed from within. Veins became visible across his face and neck, glowing like the sun.
"I should not punish such a loyal servant of the gods," Valinus continued. "Every breath I take is in service to the gods, my lord, and you,"
Makaris added with as much enthusiasm as his sore throat would allow.
"After the Dark War, after the Amber Spell, the world continued on without me. The elves stood aside as man rose to power and forged war with the dragons. A war they won no less. I have spent 40 years catching up on 1,000 years of history that should never have been allowed to happen."
"My lord?" Makaris knew he wasn't wise enough to understand the musings of his master. Valinus looked away, as if he could see or hear something that Makaris could not. For a moment, the dark elf was completely distracted, apparently enthralled in another conversation.
"History would have you believe that I started a civil war for no more than simple power. The truth is such an elusive concept. I only wanted to unite the elves so that we might wage war against the dragons."
Valinus spoke so casually of world domination until he laughed to himself. But it appears such an army wasn't needed. Mankind achieved this end all by themselves. Your kind is not to be underestimated, it seems. Makaris couldn't grasp what his master was referring to.
"Why do you want war with the dragons, my lord?"
He stayed on the floor, resting on his knees.
"Why would the gods have me wage war with the dragons?"
"That is a better question, good king.
Alas, the truth of the gods and their needs are beyond your comprehension. You need only concern yourself with my needs."
Makaris bowed, fully aware that he would never be privy to Valinus's ultimate plan. All that mattered was where Makaris would stand in all this. When the war was over, mankind would bow at the king's feet, as Valinus put him in charge of their entire race.
"At the end of the Dragon War," Valinus purred, "who else plundered the lifeless isles beside your ancestors?"
There were many paintings and tapestries devoted to telling the story of the Dragon War. The archipelago that drifted down from the larger island of Dragorn had been home to the dragons for thousands of years. When King Tyon finally broke its shores and wiped the great beasts out, the Tyon Kingdom had already begun to fracture into what are now six kingdoms. Macaris knew well of the other figureheads, whose descendants now shared the land with himself. The isles were plundered by all, but the bulk of its secrets were kept by the now four ruling families of Dragorn, the Fenrigs, the Jarls, the Danathors, and the Tregorns. It was the treasures they found that elevated them to rulers. My ancestor Galtian thought that war with the dragons would unite our kind, but it only gave them the opportunity to rebel. Macaris looked hard at his master, and wondered what treasure the dragons had been hiding. It must be something of great value if Valinus was personally hunting for it through ancient archives. I have heard of these people. Valinus replaced his mask and hood, concealing the supernatural light. They do not crown themselves kings and queens, but they rule Dragorn nonetheless. The dark elf looked upon Macaris, his expression hidden beneath the mask. Have you been to Dragorn? The king nodded. You have visited these would-be kings and queens? Again Macaris nodded. Picture it in your mind, as if you were standing there. Valinus slowly approached the king and reached out to cup Macaris's face in his gloved hand. Macaris did as he was asked, and pictured the grand compound and lush gardens that housed the mighty Trigorn family. As Valinus touched his face, the king felt an intrusion into his mind, something Aladir had trained him to detect years ago. There was nothing he could do to keep Valinus out, however. The dark elf penetrated his mind and took what he wanted, stealing the images and sounds that Macaris dragged from his memory. The mental intrusion intensified until the king lost his sight and any sense of what was around him. The overwhelming presence vanished as quickly as it had appeared. Only now, Macaris was lying on his back, atop a pile of discarded scrolls, and very much alone. Valinus was gone. Valinus stepped through the portal, leaving the semi-conscious king and the dimly lit archives, and into the fading light of the sun, as it set over Dragorn. The dark elf stumbled after his first step, feeling the weight of his magic take its toll. He had transported himself 1,200 miles in a single step, and without the use of a crystal. Nias's power gave him unimaginable strength, but its price was becoming steep. Valinus could feel the threat of a seizure. His left hand twitched uncontrollably, and his mouth was filled with a tangy taste. The shard from Paldora's gem offered him its strength, but it wasn't enough to keep him on his feet. It was for this reason that Valinus had chosen the rooftop adjacent to the Trigorn's luxurious mansion. No one was around to see him drop to his knees and ball his fists in the struggle to take back control. It took every bit of his considerable strength to keep the seizure at bay, something he could not have done 1,000 years ago without the gem, even if it was only a shard. Focus. Patience. The voice filled Valinus's head, drowning out the thundering of blood in his ears. He recognized it as Icaldir, the god of the hunt. As always, the gods offered him their wisdom as well as strength. Valinus trusted in Paldora's gem to sustain him, and he relaxed, sitting cross-legged on the rooftop. He would meditate until the moon replaced the sun. Then he would hunt. As the stars formed a canopy over the world, Valinus opened his eyes again. The crescent moon was high in the sky, casting a pale glow across the city. The dark elf rose to his feet and took in a deep breath, making certain that any chance of a seizure was past him. Dragorn and the lifeless isles that trailed off from the main island were a place of ancient and raw magic. Thousands of dragons had once called this place home, and the echo of their magical auras continued to resonate throughout. Valinus basked in those echoes for a moment, soaking up its strength. The city was not as he remembered it. Of course, it had been well over 1,000 years since he had stepped foot on the island. His father had brought him and his sister when they were no more than 10 years old. They had come to say goodbye to their mother, who had been chosen as one of the Dragorn. She was to live the rest of her life out on this island with her precious dragons and fellow peacekeepers. She fell during the Dark War, though Valinus could barely remember the day. He had felt nothing when he saw her body strewn across the battlefield. It had been much harder to kill his father and sister after he discovered the pools of Nias, but the gods had demanded a sacrifice to prove his devotion. At least they had died for something, unlike his mother. Now Dragorn was a vast city and overpopulated with humans. The city stank of their kind, The scent was carried in the warm breeze that drifted off the Aedean. There was no escaping it. Looking over the lip of the rooftop, Valinus observed the square grounds that protected the Trigorns. A 10-foot wall encompassed the mansion and its gardens and pools. The house itself was far grander than the other mansions that filled the neighborhood. This particular vantage granted Valinus a view over the wall, where a multitude of guards patrolled the grounds. There were a mix of warriors and mages. Some wielded spears, axes and swords, while others walked around with staffs or wands holstered on their hip. "Find it!" The voice of Atalan, the king of the gods, was impossible to ignore. The powerful voice rang through his mind, reminding the Dark Elf that he had their strength and blessing. Valinus took one last look at the mansion before stepping off the top of the building. The ground cracked under his feet as his muscles filled with the strength of Krayt, the god of war. The peasants and drunks in the street jumped and scuttled to the nearest alley to escape his horrifying image. The black cloak, which hung loose from his waist down, flapped around his great strides. The wide, heavy doors to the Trigorn compound were at the end of the street, where three guards stood sentry. Valinus's approaching presence demanded their attention. Even though they had no idea who he was, it was clear from their expressions that they understood the threat he posed. They formed into an arrowhead position, the leader wielding a hooked spear, ready to strike. Valinus struck first. The Dark Elf whipped his hand out and sent a concussive wave so powerful it took all three men through the heavy door, splintering it into 1,000 pieces. The dead guards flew into the grounds amid the splinters and wrought iron. The thunderclap would certainly alert the rest of the Trigorn soldiers, but it didn't matter now. "Enjoy it." The God of War's voice was always the sweetest. Valinus marched into the grounds and made for the main entrance to the mansion. A bell was rung, and guards began to appear from everywhere, some even pouring out of the buildings surrounding the compound. Their numbers would do them no good. The first to attack him were the mages. Both stood before him with their staffs held high, but their spells were for naught. Valinus held up his hand and used a shield of pure blue energy to absorb the first magical attack. The second spell he merely cast aside with a wave of a hand. The spell rebounded into the gardens and exploded, killing three approaching swordsmen. With fire and ice he killed them both, skewering one with an icicle and the other a flaming ball of fire. As he ascended the steps of the veranda, a guard lashed out with a sword, his aim perfect for slicing Valinus's head in two. The Dark Elf caught the sword in one gloved hand and froze the steel until the blade shattered. The man looked from his broken sword to the menacing mask that looked back at him. Valinus punched his arm out and cast an explosive spell that sent the guard flying off the veranda and through the trellis. His sharp elven ears heard all the bones in his body break. A fireball blew the mansion doors off their hinges and broke the protective spells that lined the framework. Another mage appeared from the hallway to his left and fired off a spell from his wand. Valinus simply shifted his shoulders and evaded the magical attack, which continued past the Dark Elf and into an emerging axeman. The axeman burst apart like a sack filled with too much wine. The explosive blood splatter blinded the guard following Valinus into the house, who was then picked up by the Dark Elf and used as a shield against the next spell. An icicle shot through the man's chest and threatened to impale them both. Valinus smiled under his mask as he unleashed a staccato of purple lightning from his palm. The destructive magic streaked through the hallway until it engulfed the mage, killing him in seconds. The Herald of the Gods killed indiscriminately as he made his way up to the master bedroom. The expensive decorations and ornaments that lined the halls and walls were covered in blood or destroyed altogether. A small fire had been started in the lavish foyer, where a burning corpse had set the material of a sofa to flames. The men shouted from all around the compound as confusion and chaos took over. They didn't know who was attacking them or how many there were. Valinus was deep inside the mansion now, using his magical sense to find the traps set by the Trigorn's mages. It was the complexity of these traps that ultimately guided him to the master bedroom. The cluster of guards standing outside the room were among the biggest Valinus had seen. Even their swords and hammers appeared to be heavier than the average human. The Dark Elf smiled behind his mask. He decided he would kill them with his bare hands and give his magic a rest for the moment. The group charged and roared, hoping to simply stampede Valinus to death, as his elven form was far slighter than theirs. A sidestep and a shift in his shoulders allowed Valinus to dodge the first two swings, putting him right in the middle of the group. With godly strength, Valinus kicked the man to his left, sending him straight through the nearest window and out into the night. Blades and fists came at him then, from every angle with fierce abandon. Valinus lashed out with every limb, each more deadly than any weapon of steel, and broke bones, burst organs, and laid waste to the Trigorn soldiers. The enchantments around the door to the master bedroom practically sang of their secrets to Valinus. He could tell that the spell was designed to repel and incinerate any who tried to enter without permission. The dark elf waved his hand across the doorframe and used the power of Nias, the god of magic, to wipe the enchantments from existence, reducing most of the wooden frame to dust. After that, it was merely a flick of the finger to blow open the doors, eliciting a small yelp from the woman inside. Valinus stalked across the sumptuous room, taking note of the naked young olive-skinned man, clinging to the headboard for his life. The tattoo on his arm suggested he wasn't the head of the Trigorn family, but rather a lover for hire. That led Valinus to examine the naked woman beside him, her knuckles white from holding onto the bedsheets. The dark elf estimated her age to be around 40, but human ages were just as hard to judge as elven in his eyes. She didn't look as terrified as the man, but her fear was undeniable. Her skin was in perfect condition, with clean, perfumed black hair and expensive jewelry around her neck and adorning her fingers. This was the head of the Trigorn family.
"What do you want?"
Her voice was barely a whisper.
"Find it. The treasures your ancestors plundered from these isles."
Valinus enjoyed the effect his altered voice had on the woman.
"I would see all that you have, and any records of the ones you sold or gave away."
That was 1,000 years ago, the woman replied, desperately trying to gain some composure in the face of the one who had slaughtered her private army. Valinus whipped his arm out and snapped the naked man's neck with telekinesis. His body jerked and slumped off the side of the bed, startling the Trigorn woman.
The vaults are shared between the four houses. The woman didn't even look at her dead lover.
It's located in the central district, fronted as a brothel. Any of the artifacts or treasures that remain are kept underground, but the security there is tenfold what you encountered here. The Trigorn woman was trying to ignite a little fire in her belly. You should just walk away from this now, and I will forget your trespasses this day. At that moment, five more guards came rushing into the room with their weapons raised. Valinus swiveled around and unleashed a torrent of fire that engulfed them all, burning them until they resembled the bark of a tree. Through it all, the woman screamed and retreated further into her bed. Valinus slowly turned back to her.
"Fear not. You will never forget this day." There were more screams to come.
Part 2 Chapter 10 Mournblade. Gideon strolled through the oasis of Dragon's Reach, enjoying the sights and scented smells of the trees. He wished Abigail could have seen this. She would have been more excited than he was to have found the home of the dragons, not to mention actually living among them. The mage's hand naturally drifted to the wand on his hip. Her wand. Gideon wanted to scream and shout and cry at her loss, to hit the world for taking her from him. But now, surrounded by so much beauty and mystery, he realized it was his duty to live for her. The sound of melodic singing brought him from his reverie and steered him to the left. Through the trees and past a cluster of boulders that formed a small hillock, Gideon came across yet another magnificent sight since his arrival in the giant crater. Adriel, the last of the Dragorn, was singing to a tree, which continued to grow in front of the mage's very eyes. Its roots dug deep into the ground as the trunk expanded and stretched high into the canopy above. Branches extended from the bark and sprouted lush green leaves. When Adriel finally stopped singing, the tree stood silent, its leaves gently blowing in the breeze. The elf placed his palm against the bark and smiled warmly at his work.
"How did you do that?"
Adriel smiled all the more, but made no motion to face the mage as he continued to check over the new roots. Gideon walked over and placed a tentative hand over the bark, as if it were some illusion.
"The elves have always sung to the trees," Adriel explained. "'Tis a gift we are born with, as the woodland folk, though I fear my people have abandoned those ways in favor of war. Galanor could do just as I did, if he wished, but he was trained to take life, not grant it."
Gideon looked past the new tree to the broken stumps and fallen logs that littered the forest ground. This had been the spot where Meliath was brought down by the other dragons a couple of nights ago. Adriel was truly the caretaker of Dragon's Reach, healing the trees and plants that suffered under the foot of such large creatures. Again, as the elf moved about, the grass and flowers, even some of the low-hanging branches, subtly moved towards him, as if pulled in by some unseen force. The forest loved Adriel just as much as he loved the forest.
"Where's Galandavax?" Gideon asked, changing the subject from Galanor.
Keeping a close eye on Meliath, Adriel looked to the north. Gideon didn't doubt that the elf knew exactly where his oldest friend was.
"I feel ashamed for my part in his captivity." Gideon had tried not to dwell on it, but living among the dragons made it impossible.
"It was not you who placed those enchantments upon his scales."
Adriel bade Gideon to follow him, as they left the scene of devastation and headed deeper into the reach.
"You cannot take the blame for your ancestors' failings any more than you can take the credit for their achievements."
"I don't think Meliath sees it that way," Gideon replied solemnly.
"He requires time, something dragons have in abundance."
Adriel smiled, trying to alleviate Gideon's guilt.
"He will find all that he needs here, in time."
"What about what the world needs?" Gideon asked pointedly.
"The world needs dragons now more than ever, especially the Dragorn. If peace is to be had, it will require one such as yourself to broker it between our people."
"Your approach is far more diplomatic than that of Galanor. I shall give you that."
Adriel continued through the trees and made a sudden left.
"Perhaps asking you to fight the Darkerkin is too much," Gideon went on,
"but you could certainly help to prevent a war between the elves and man. Their alliance will be needed to repel the Darkerkin."
Adriel remained silent and showed the mage into a small clearing, with a single smooth rock in the center. It wasn't particularly big, coming up to Gideon's waist, but the rock itself was not what caught the mage's attention. Buried halfway into the stone was an exquisite elven scimitar, almost majestic in its appearance, as the light of the sun pierced the canopy and reflected off the blade and the hilt. Gideon was drawn to it. He had never fought with a sword before, always favoring his staff and magic. But something about this blade felt... Before he knew it, Gideon was standing right in front of it, with his arm outstretched towards the hilt. The mage caught himself and looked to Adriel for answers, who could only look back at Gideon with a curious expression.
"I don't understand."
Gideon pulled his hand back, almost afraid to touch the ornate sword.
"Before your kind left the Wild Moors and the Dark War savaged Ilion's islands, the Dragorn were a peacekeeping force to be reckoned with. Elandril, the first of my order, was the greatest warrior, the greatest of all elf kind. He fell in one of the oldest wars in elven history."
Gideon's attention was fully arrested by Adriel's history lesson. He knew that Elandril was also the name of the new elven city in northern Ada, but he knew nothing of its namesake, or any ancient wars beyond the fabled Dark War.
"How did he die?" the mage asked.
"Against the Orc," Adriel replied bitterly.
"Orc? I've never heard of them."
"And you never will. Elandril united the elves and the dwarves and drove the foul beasts south of Scylla's Gate, into the Undying Mountains, where their numbers dwindled until death finally claimed them. But his sword, Mournblade, has been passed down through the Order as a reminder of what war begets." The Dragorn turned from the way of the sword and offered wisdom in its place.
Adriel turned to the magnificent blade.
"We carried them as a symbol rather than a weapon, but I lost mine in the final days of the Dragon War."
Gideon looked back at the blade, realizing that if Adriel had lost his own sword, then this one must have belonged to Elandril.
"I was able to retrieve Elandril's sword before we left the Lifeless Isles. I placed it in the stone and had Galandavax breathe a special enchantment over it. Only when the Dragorn are truly needed again can Mournblade be pulled free."
Adriel reached out and gripped the red hilt that glistened with minute crystals and golden script.
With strength that Gideon knew was quite considerable, Adriel tried to heave the blade free of the stone.
It didn't budge.
You see, our time has passed, Gideon. As with all humans, Gideon felt the need to touch the ancient blade, as if that physical connection would cement its existence in his mind. The mage went for the hilt, but stopped short when he heard a snapping twig behind them. Ilargo, in all his emerald magnificence, was standing in the clearing, having used his hunting skills to follow them silently. The dragon stared at Gideon and tilted his head. "It seems you have an admirer," Adriel said, with his typical smile. "Ilargo has never met a human that didn't want to kill him before. You are something of a spectacle to him." "I am a spectacle to him?" Gideon asked incredulously. "There is no greater spectacle than him." The mage was truly taken with their kind. "Indeed, we are of the same mind in that regard." Adriel walked over to Ilargo and affectionately rubbed the scales on his neck. The green dragon continued to observe Gideon, as if he were the only thing in the clearing. The mage was suddenly overcome with Ilargo's emotions when the dragon attempted to communicate with him. Gideon felt the need to know Ilargo as much as the dragon apparently wanted to know him. Was this the dragon's way of asking him to be friends? An echo resounded in Gideon's mind, as if he could hear someone calling to him from far away. The feeling of anticipation filled the mage to the point of bursting, until Adriel stepped between him and Ilargo. "Is everything all right, Gideon?" the elf asked, concerned with Gideon's distant expression. The connection between man and dragon was severed, leaving Gideon to his own emotions. It left the mage a little disorientated and confused. He had no idea why Ilargo was feeling so expectant, or why he had decided to communicate it. But Gideon quickly found himself craving that connection again. Communing with a dragon made him feel whole in a way he had never experienced. "I'm fine," Gideon replied. "It just takes some getting used to." Adriel laughed softly. "Over 1,000 years have passed, but I still remember the first time a dragon decided to speak to me. It can be overwhelming in the beginning. After Galandavax chose me, and I embraced the way of the Dragorn, I found it much easier sharing actual words than raw emotions all the time." Gideon still couldn't believe that Adriel and hundreds of Dragorn before him could actually speak to dragons in the same way they were now speaking. Ilargo shrugged his mighty wings and turned to leave, glancing at Gideon for a moment before he took off into the sky. The mage watched him fly into the ocean of blue and join his mother, Rhaenyl, the Emerald Star. In the heart of Dragon's Reach, Galanor climbed to the top of the highest floating boulders with the grace and speed typical of his kind. Today he needed the vantage point to find his prey. From atop the boulder, he could see the entire expanse of Dragon's Reach in every direction. It was the most beautiful prison he had ever seen, but a prison all the same. The elf needed to get out of the crater and save Adalandra, and every second he spent in paradise was the second she spent in hell. The elven warrior was already annoyed with himself for losing the diviner. For 2 days, he had searched the small lake and the cave hidden behind the waterfall. It was only as the sun set the day before that he found the shards crunched into the cave floor. There wasn't much that could withstand the weight of Maliath. He found himself craving more information after his few words with Phelan, and now he was completely in the dark. Everything outside of Dragon's Reach was a mystery. From his high vantage, however, Galanor could easily spot what he was looking for. About 5 miles away, the elf's fine eyes could see smoke rising from the top of the trees. The area around the smoke was surrounded by an unusual concentration of dragons, and big ones at that. That's where they were keeping Maliath. Every now and then, Galanor caught sight of flames breaching the canopy, until one of the dragons swooped by and put it out with a breath of ice. It was an incredible sight on its own, since little was mentioned in history about dragons' breath beyond fire. But Adriel had confirmed that they actually used both ice and fire. It was just another reason to stay on the dragon's good side. Galanor took a breath and steadied his heart. Just thinking about what he was going to do next made his chest feel as if it might burst. It was the only way, and he knew it, though. For the second time in his life, Galanor was going to attempt to steal a dragon. Adalandra blinked hard in an effort to clear the haze from her sight. The Queen of the Elves was barely aware of the chains that shackled her wrists together, tying her to the ceiling. Her toes wiggled in search of the floor, but could only brush the cold surface. Featureless faces continued to appear from the blurry surroundings and examine her body. All the while, she could hear rhythmic music being played in the background, underscoring the laughter and groans of pleasure.
"You can get closer," a familiar voice purred from out of sight. "She won't bite. Hard."
The wavy features of a stranger's face came into view before her eyes. The man was heavily tattooed, with piercings dotted around his face and bald head. His wide eyes narrowed as he took in all of Adelandra's body. The elf wanted to recoil when he licked his lips, but found her muscles unresponsive. The stranger's heavy hand caressed her cheek and ran down her body, taking extra time over her breasts.
Was she naked?
Adelandra couldn't tell. The last thing she remembered clearly was being in her cell, deep in the heart of the Great Pyramid. They must have drugged her food this time. They always found a way.
"She is my favorite plaything."
The goddess came into view like a snake slithering around its prey. As the effects of the drugs began to wear off, the elven queen could see the wicked glee that illuminated the goddess's face. The wicked ruler of the Darkerkin took much pleasure in showing off her prisoner, almost as much pleasure as she took from enjoying the elf in her bed. Those were different and more potent drugs than these, though Adelandra only wished they left her without the memory of participating. The goddess reached out and took a cup of wine from a passing slave. "When my army is finished with wiping out the Ilians and the elves, I will march into my ancestors' lands and show you what's left of your kind." Adelandra could see them all now. The elf was the centerpiece of a party, though most of the guests appeared to be having sex with each other. She had been brought to the central throne chamber, where Edoron had been thrown from the balcony. That seemed like a lifetime ago now. Adelandra wasn't even sure how long it had been since she saw Galanor and Gideon. This had become her life now. By night, she was the personal plaything of the goddess, and whoever else had the privilege of sharing the queen's bed. Most days she was forced to fight in the arena, though that was an easy task, since the better fighters had been sent along with the armies to Ilion. The Darkerkin were ever cautious of her enhanced strength and speed, however, always drugging her to transport her from place to place. The goddess stepped aside to greet another of her guests, and Adelandra saw the green crystal mounted on a pedestal. There were three more around her, just as they were in the arena and in the goddess's chamber. The elven queen had never seen them before her time in the southern lands of Ada, but she knew what the crystals were here for. When in their presence, she couldn't use magic to help fight her opponents or even resist the drugs. It was only in the brief moments she had in the bathhouse before she was presented to the goddess at night when Adelandra could use some of her innate power. As always, the queen used her spells to see through the eyes of Ollie, her daughter's owl. She had almost welcomed the drugs on the night it was revealed that Valinus was free. Rayna and Phelan had been speaking with the ranger she now knew was called Asher, and the greycoat, Nathaniel. Not only had the dark elf been freed of his prison, but he had been free for 40 years. Despair had almost crippled Adelandra that night. The only happiness to be found was in the extraordinary relationship forming between her daughter and the human knight.
"Excellent," the goddess exclaimed, after speaking to one of her soldiers.
"Overlord Kett sends word of their progress." The guests and soldiers stopped and listened to their ruler. "They have crossed Drowner's Run and made camp on Ilion's shores. At dawn, they marched to Scylla's Gate." Everyone cheered and howled before continuing with their drinking and fornicating.
"You will never breach those gates," Adelandra said through gritted teeth.
The goddess swiveled on the elf with a face of fury. It slowly turned into a cruel smile as the torturous ruler turned to the stranger who had been enjoying the touch of Adelandra's body. "She is yours for the night, Lord Six. I will have a chamber prepared for you both." The man flashed a broad smile of yellow, sharpened teeth. Adelandra blinked slowly and kept her expression one of stone. She would give the goddess no pleasure in her reaction. Lord Six and the goddess walked away to enjoy other aspects of the party, leaving Adelandra to her thoughts alone. She did her best to ignore the others that passed by and inspected every inch of her body. They had a particular interest in her ears,
and often pulled on them. The lone tear that streaked down her pale face couldn't be helped in the end. She was utterly alone, and the world was coming to an end around her. The queen was helpless to make any kind of difference. Only the dragons could alter the fate of Verda now.
Chapter 11. Legendary.
Alidir strode through the palace of Carath as if he owned it, paying no heed to the soldiers and their curious looks. None would dare stop him, or the assassin that walked beside him. Rodo-san had arrived that same day, as ordered, having brought with him the feared Arrakesh. The capital city of the Arid Lands was now under the watchful eye of the most dangerous killers in human history. Having spent so many centuries living in Nightfall, Alidir was accustomed to the heat and humidity that was typical of Ilion's southern lands. The elf reflected that the city was only a day's journey west from their secret school for assassins. How many had tried to find it over the millennia and given up the place as myth and legend? Of course, the city was not what it used to be. Upon his last visit, Carath had been a place of order, with severe punishments for those who stepped out of line. Now the slaves had risen up, the city's own foundations, and created chaos when their plans so desperately needed compliance. It wouldn't be long before the armies of the Darkerkin arrived, and the city would need to feed and house them while they were supplied with stronger weapons and armor. Though vicious creatures, the Darkerkin were barbaric and would be no match for the Elven army. Thankfully, measures had been taken a long time ago to correct this imbalance. The elves would be greeted by the largest army to ever walk the earth. Small fires and columns of smoke could be seen through every window in the palace. The city had turned on itself, thanks to the so-called House of Owls. Alidir smiled to himself, knowing that even now, his warriors would be combing Carath and seeking the owls out. He would bring order where his brother Nakir had failed. Two golden doors were swung open for them, revealing a long room filled with the heads of the great houses and the personal advisers to the boy emperor, Pharos. Alidir could feel Nakir's presence before he saw him, standing at the head of the long table that occupied the room. Behind the elf was a large square banner, decorated with the symbol of the new dawn. Nakir had stylized it himself centuries ago, when he first had the idea to take over the arid lands from within. A white circle, with rays of light surrounding it, sat against the red material with a white diamond shape in the center. Everyone in the room had a golden ring with the same emblem engraved into it. Nakir moved to greet his brother, putting the others at ease. Their elven heritage was known to these few, as was their swift wrath to any who couldn't keep a secret. It probably didn't help that an Arrakesh stood beside him, with his red blindfold tied around his eyes. The sight of any of the legendary assassins was enough to make the bravest of souls lose control of their bladder, let alone Rodo-Sarn, the current father of Nightfall. "Allow me to introduce you, brother." Nakir turned with an outstretched hand to the two approaching soldiers. Alidir had met the predecessors of those present decades ago, and knew none of the current roster that formed the upper echelon of the new dawn. "This is Supreme Commander Rorsash, the leader of the Carath army." Alidir looked upon the rotund human and wondered how long it had been since he actually used the sword on his hip. The large man bowed his head in respect and swept his cloak aside for dramatic effect. He was more politician than warrior. "It is the honor of my life to meet the head of the hand." Rorsash spoke in basic Ilion rather than his native tongue of Kilanti. "This is my second-in-command, Halion Al-Anan." The elf looked upon what was clearly a warrior, with a strong jaw and a physique to match. "Like you, my lord, this is Halion's first time within the sanctuary. I was attending these meetings before your father was born." Alidir walked away with Rodo-Sarn trailing him. Both Rorsash and Halion took a step back to give the assassin more room. "Shall we begin?" Alidir looked to Nakir, who nodded resentfully. It was obvious his brother didn't want him here, but the will of Valinus was not to be questioned. Everyone except the elves and Ro took their seats along the table. Most wore expressions of fear. They were all weak in Aladir's eyes. Nakir had taken control of the city, and the three others that dotted the arid lands, but looking around the table now, Alidir couldn't imagine how. Perhaps his brother was owed more credit for his work in the desert. "Praise Valinus,
The new dawn is here,
Nakir announced over the room. They repeated his words with less enthusiasm, looking nervously to Aladir and Roe instead. The work of your grandfathers and their grandfathers is about to bear fruit, soon.
You have all failed, Aladir stated flatly, interrupting his brother.
Nakir, whose bald, tattooed head was exposed without his hood, looked to Aladir with contempt.
Valinus has sent me because of your failure.
The idea of a direct order from the Herald of the Gods drained the colour from most.
Days from now, the Darkkin will arrive at Scylla's gate and be greeted by chaos. This city is in ruin under your leadership.
Aladir paced the table, meeting every one of their eyes. He noted the look of surprise on the young commander's face, clearly hearing the news of the Darkkin for the first time.
You can't even keep your slaves under control. What hope do you have of supplying Valinus's forces and marching on the rest of Ilion? Can a group of slave orphans really topple this city?
They are many, my lord,
one of the advisers blurted from the other side of the table.
They have spies in every house and killers on every corner.
Rodosan, who had remained on the other side of the table, stepped forward and plunged a small blade into the top of the advisor's skull. It had been executed with such speed that the man's expression remained the same as he fell into the table with a thud.
They conquer you with fear,
Aladir continued, as if nothing had happened. The others around the table recoiled from the body and the running pool of blood that spread across the table's surface.
But I have brought something worse.
The room followed the elf's gaze to Rodosarn.
As we speak, your city is being flooded with Arrakesh.
Supreme Commander Rorschach sat back in his chair in shock and looked to Nakir, who said nothing.
Your army is to stand by and ensure the Darkkin have the room to make camp. Have the forges manned day and night and the armor made ready. Once the Darkkin have been supplied, the combined forces will march to Tregaron in the north of the desert. There we will be met by any soldiers stationed at Amaraska and Hervona.
Aladir could see it beautifully in his mind. From the deep south, the Darkkin and the Karathan army would march north, to the edge of the arid lands, and bring order to the city of Tregaron, as well as resupplying and adding to their forces. Then the soldiers from the east and west of the desert would join them before marching into the green pastures of the north. First they would sack Galosha, the most southern town in Alborn, before marching east to the coast. There they would ravage Barosh and resupply like a hungry plague of locusts. Then it was only a few hundred miles up the shining coast to Velia, the capital of Alborn and home to King Rengar. The armies of Oroth in the far north, under the command of King Macaris, would march south and sweep through Greystone and Lirion. The armies of Greystone and Lirion would join them or die with King Gregorn and Queen Isabella. Moving east, their combined forces would devastate Palios and Whistletown before joining the Darkkin and the Karathan army in Velia, sealing Alborn's fate. From Velia, the largest army Ilion had ever seen would greet the white sails of the Elven army. All of that hinged on the next few days. If the Darkkin army couldn't get through the gates and be resupplied with new armor, the Karathan army would be hard-pressed to beat the forces of Alborn.
How will we open the gate? Rorschach's deep voice asked, though his eyes glanced nervously at Roe.
Leave that to us, Nakir replied, looking to Aladir. Indeed, it would probably take all of their considerable strength to open Scylla's gate. They had been magically sealed over 1,000 years ago, and would demand equal magic to open them again. Aladir was confident that with the power of Nias, granted them by Valinus, the gate would bend to their will. Another hour went by, as the heads of Karath's industry gave their reports. Aladir continued to interrupt his brother and give the Supreme Commander and the advisers new orders. He would have them earn their place in the new world. Eventually, the room was dismissed and the elves were left alone with Rodosarn, standing off to the side.
Why are you here? Nakir hissed.
Aladir signaled to Roe, and the assassin left them to it.
I am here because the Master wills it.
I was told the Darkkin were mine to command. I am to lead the march north.
Nakir came to stand by his brother.
And so you will, brother, Aladir replied calmly. But if the Darkkin are met with resistance before they can march out of the arid lands, the other kingdoms will learn of the invasion and rally to Karath's aid.
I have been sent to ensure that Carath falls in line. Once we take the capital, the other cities in this god's forsaken land will follow suit. Carath is the anvil,